One, two, three. Good morning, Tucson, and welcome to this Friday edition of the Creative City Show with me, your host, Zach Yenser. As every day, Monday through Friday, 9 to 10, we share the stories and strategies of the people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. And along the way, we envision, we debate, we discuss the issues and themes critical towards getting it there. And today is a call-in show, friends and listeners. 790-2040 is your Why I Love Where I Live live line, where you can jump on in and join the conversation. And I certainly hope that you do, because Friday is our Connecting the Dots week in review, making sense of the week that was. And it's all about our conversation here on the air together. And I want to talk about a few fun things and a few lighter things and a few serious things. And then I'm also expecting my friend Luis to be in studio and to have a fun conversation about a non-fun topic. And that is life insurance. And whether you're young or whether you're older, a lot of people don't think about the need for this. And my friend Luis Hernandez will be in to talk about it. I expect him to be. But I want to talk a little bit of national politics. Did anybody see the news about Mayor Bloomberg? Former Mayor Bloomberg may enter the presidential race. I want to review our conversation on Wednesday about the failure of Proposition 205, Sanctuary City, as I think being, I don't want to be as strong as saying a referendum, but I think it's a look into the heads of Tucsonans as to what they're expecting out of city and city leadership, what that means going forward. We'll talk a little bit of sports as we head into a big weekend in sports. And then I also want to talk about the article that Joe Ferguson from the Daily Star put out after his interview with Regina Romero, the first one after the election results, with some starting priorities. And I want to look back at, as well, at Mayor Rothschild's 180-day plan, just to kind of see what is on the mind of Tucson voters when they get excited about stuff. What is it? And I know that's a funny way to pose that, but 205 and the result of 205 just got me thinking, right? That 71-29% result, where 71% of Tucson voters said no to 205, has my gears turning. And I want to get your thoughts on that, Tucson, as we look at our week in review. And it was a busy week as well. If you missed it, we talked with George Hammond. We got a Southern Arizona economic update. We talked with Fletcher McCusker about business and entrepreneurship. We spent most of an hour with Dr. Gabe Trujillo from Tucson Unified School District, about what's going on there and some of the recent stories. If you missed any of it, go to kvui.com/podcasts and check out also iTunes or Google Play Music if you prefer. This story, I'll start with this. Mayor Mike Bloomberg eyeing presidential bid. I want to talk about this a little bit. I've seen eye roll over this. I've seen D's I roll over this. I've seen R's. I roll over this. Just when you thought that the Democratic side of, or the non-R at least, side of things, the story says that Mayor Michael Bloomberg eyeing a run for president in 2020 would submit his name for the Democratic presidential primary in Alabama today, Friday, the deadline to do so. Just when you think the field is starting to shrink enough to become more manageable, just when you think that we're narrowing down to our top five or six candidates, just as the debate stage is going from two debate stages to one debate stage, we add a new character into the mix. Now, don't get me wrong. I think Mayor Michael Bloomberg is a good candidate. Certainly, if you said, do you want Tom Steyer or do you want Michael Bloomberg? Just in terms of competitiveness as a candidate, I would take Michael Bloomberg every time. So I think he's would be a reasonable candidate, but not now. I mean, not after nearly 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 months of this process. To me, it's just too late. To me, it's just too late. An advisor to Bloomberg said in a statement Thursday evening that, of course, Michael Bloomberg's one of his pushes to get in is, you know, about Donald Trump, what isn't these days. In 2018, he spent more than $100 million to help elect Democrats to ensure that Congress began to hold the president accountable. And this year, he helped Democrats win control of both houses of the Virginia legislature. We now need to finish the job and ensure that Trump is defeated. But Mike is increasingly concerned that the current field of candidates is not well positioned to do that. Based on his record of accomplishment, leadership, and his ability to bring people together to drive change, Wolfson added, Mike might be able to take the fight to Trump and win. Again, earlier in 2019, sure, jump on in. Again, qualified competitive candidate, I think very interesting one in my personal opinion, but not now. The field is set. Here's the field to me. Give me a call on our Why I Love Where I Live live line, 790-2040, to let me know if you think I am tracking. Here's the field, period, end of story. I don't care who's on the debate stage in December. You know, I don't care that the tiff between Hillary Clinton and Tulsi Gabbard gave Tulsi Gabbard a poll jump, so now she's on the debate stage. It's not happening. Here's the field. Andrew Yang, Pete Buttigieg, Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren, and Bernie Sanders. Again, this is based on the news of Michael Bloomberg about to jump in. This is just a fun observation. Big breaking news yesterday. Michael Bloomberg is looking to jump into the Democratic presidential race. It's over. Here's the top five. Now it's just a decision of who is going to emerge out of this top five. Yang, Buttigieg, Biden, Warren, or Sanders. That's it. In my personal and humble opinion, that's it. That's who it's going to be. And my guess is that it's going to be between Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders of who of that list drops off first. But that's it. They're the ones raising the money. They're the ones on the debate stage for the time being. Those are the representatives, the moderate versus liberal wing or the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. No, just no. Let's let this thing go. This is the field. Let it shrink. Let's stop having these 3, 4, 7 hour marathon events with 24 candidates. We're done. Stop. Michael Bloomberg, I respect the heck out of you. Don't stop. It's over. Way too late into this. And already we're seeing, you know, many people say, well, Steyer jumped in late, but he's got billions. So can a billionaire jump in, move the needle? No, it's not happening. He is dropping money. The needle's not moving. It's over. Those are the five. That's it. We're going to go to our first break. That's my first item of the day. Let me know what you think, Tucson. Am I on track? Am I not? And by the way, this is not an R conversation, D conversation, I conversation. This is just looking at the landscape as it's shaping up. 790-2040 is your live line opportunity to jump on the air after our first break. So hang in there and we'll be right back. Tucson, welcome back to the show. Excited to announce a new sponsor of the Creative City Show here today. Today's show is sponsored in part by the Allstate Agencies of Edmund Marquez. As an Allstate agent for the last 23 years, Edmund Marquez has three local agencies to serve you. Edmund's passion is helping Tucsonans create their best possible future. He serves on 8 boards of directors in Tucson, including the Rio Nuevo District, Sun Corridor, the Southern Arizona Leadership Council, and more, and brings the same commitment to helping Tucson residents protect their home, auto, personal property, and financial future. Stop by one of his three locations in Tucson to get to know Edmund and how he can help you and your family. 520-323-9333 to get your insurance quotes today, thanks to the Edmund Marquez Allstate agencies for supporting the mission and vision of the Creative City Show. Let's head over to, it looks like, Bunker on our live line. Bunker called our Why I Love Where I Live live line, 790-2040. You're live and on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Well, have a glorious good morning. I've got two comments to kind of make on Mr. Bloomberg.
Yes, sir.
One is the fact that, as you mentioned, he's the last year or the last election, he pumped in $100 million to get various candidates elected. I see there a possibility of conflict of interest in that. There's people beholding to him because of that. That sets, to me, a dangerous precedent, as if this man should run and be elected as president, and by chance you have a Democratic House and Senate, you have basically a fiefdom. He is the king. They are his fiefs. The second objection I have is that Mr. Bloomberg is a very vociferous advocate against the Second Amendment, or I should say guns, because I don't think he's against the whole thing, but he is definitely against the protection of gun rights. And for an awful lot of Americans who are gun owners, he's scary, because he has spent millions trying to get gun laws changed, and the problem is not the gun laws, the problem is the criminals. And anyhow, that's my comment, and I like your feedback.
Yeah, Bunker, I appreciate it. On the first one, your first comment made me think about what happened with Tom Steyer this week, where one of his aides and I can't tell if anybody decided whether it was illegal or inappropriate or not. It sounded like maybe a miscommunication. I think it was more, but it sounded like Tom Steyer one of his aides was trying to kind of pay for endorsements, was the accusation, providing funding to different congressmen and women for their endorsements. He only has one congressional endorsement at this point, the only billionaire on the stage, so to speak, right now. It'd be two if Michael Bloomberg jumped in. But endorsements are kind of a messy game. When money is handed over, there are allegiances. So I think it's an interesting concern. My other thought about if you have concerns about the Second Amendment or gun rights, I would think that my initial thought when I heard that was, I think Bloomberg would be more centrist on that issue, maybe along the lines of Pete or a Joe Biden. I don't think he's as far left on the topic as Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders would be. So I would be curious if anyone looking at Michael Bloomberg is more or less concerned about his stance on that issue than the current field of candidates. I haven't tracked his record on that as closely as other issues, so I'll leave that there. But Bunker, I appreciate the call. The Why I Love Where I Live live line, 790-2040, is how Bunker jumped on, and you can as well. We're wrapping up our Friday by connecting the dots, making sense of the week that was. And I want to just touch back to a conversation that I had with Tim Steller on the air on Wednesday after Election Day, and he and I had some conversations in the past about the geography of Tucson politics, and he sees, and we'll see if the election results, as we look at precincts and voting, backs this up, but that, within the city limits of Tucson, there's a streetcar corridor, what he calls a piece of town that deals with some very urban issues, whether that's housing, gentrification, displacement, the streetcar, neighborhoods, kind of that university core, the downtown core, and that the issues that are often at the fore there Tend to be a little bit more of a progressive nature, and those voices, and this is from his experience, how he explained it. This is Tim Steller from the Arizona Daily Star, that those voices often seem to be the loudest and the most active, if not the loudest, the most active. And so that when even Tucsonans think about Tucson or other people think of Tucson, the sense of what Tucson is, what Tucson cares about, where Tucson lies on the political spectrum, seems to be defined by what he calls the streetcar corridor, the downtown university core, and the issues that are in focus there. But he says the broader city has a little bit more of a what he calls a political perspective on the median point of Jonathan Rothschild. That is to say, center left. But maybe a little bit more, kind of more business and economic oriented, more nuts and bolts, a little bit less progressive on issues, at least in practice, a little bit more, again, centrist left, Jonathan Rothschild median point. And again, we'll see how the precincts and the numbers line up on that in the coming days, but the just utter defeat, and I'm not being dramatic, just for the sake of being dramatic, 71-29 was a pretty dramatic defeat of one of the most hotly contested items on the election 2019 ballot, Proposition 205, and formerly talked about as the Sanctuary City Initiative. That was a 70-30, excuse me, said of Tucsonans who voted. Said no. And it, to me, and I've thought about this a lot, talked about it on Wednesday, I continue to feel this way. And I want to get your thoughts on this here in our last few minutes of this top of the hour here. 790-2040 is your live line to jump in. I want to push past the stereotypes of Tucson and the issues that we care about. 205 really got me thinking. And even changed some of my perspectives about Tucson and how the voting electorate thinks. I'm starting to agree more and more with the geography of Tucson politics that Tim Steller has broadly put out there. That I think that more than we give credit for, Tucson voters, right or left, RD, I in the middle, I don't think it matters politically in terms of the designation. My growing sense is that the dominant part of Tucson really does care about getting the nuts and bolts right. That there is a median political point around Jonathan Rothschild's priorities. And I wanted to go back, way back, and look at what were those priorities? And let's see if I can go ahead and pull it up here. I have Mayor Rothschild's 180-day work plan progress report, where when he ran for office, he laid out specific steps he would take in his first 180 days as mayor. And I wanted to go back and look at that first 180 days. To see what he promised, to see what he was voted in on, and to see what he checked the box off on in those first 180 days. And let me just read briefly down the list of those priorities. Number one, jobs and economic development. That involved, things like a small business advocate. He had an education piece in there. Let's not overlook that he felt that there was some things that he could speak into, not from a city charter standpoint, but speak into from an education standpoint. But land use code, permit review, checklists, cross-train inspectors, have mayor business roundtables, Tucson trade initiatives, retain existing employers, work on the streetcar, downtown development incentives. Number two, safe and vital neighborhoods, right? Public safety communication systems is an item. Potholes is a priority item. Parks and recreation is an item. Working to get mini dorms out of residential neighborhoods was something that he worked on. Neighborhood business districts, public health and safety. An open government initiative was something on that list. We continue down here and we look at number four, more towards the bottom of the list, was environmental leadership, solar energy and water conservation, walkways, bikeways, greenways, energy efficiency, renewable energy, road design, shade streets. I mean, so it's this interesting mix of, you see that the first three were really nitty-gritty public policy, roads, core services, business, economic development, and as well some bully pulpit items on education and sustainability. One of the things that he was criticized of in this election was that he didn't go far enough, fast enough on climate and environmental issues, which is something that Regina Romero, mayor-elect, has promised to work on more. But I look at the median point, right? If that's the median point, I look at 205. I'm left thinking that Tucson voters in the years ahead want a core services driven administration that puts the, as our friend Christy Simone says, puts the ice cream in the cone so we can work on the sprinkles. Puts the ice cream in the cone so we can work on the sprinkles. What do you think? As you're continuing to mull over our general election here in Tucson, any thoughts? Why I Love Where I Live? Live line is open, 790-2040. We'll be back for more of Connecting the Dots here on this beautiful Friday afternoon in Tucson. Don't go away. Tucson, welcome back to our Friday show. It is Friday, November 8th, and we are here in the 1030 The Voice studios. I'm your host, Zach Yenser, and you're listening to the Creative City Show, where we talk about people and ideas shaping Tucson's future, envisioning, debating, discussing the issues and themes critical towards getting us there. And we spent the first half of the hour, if you missed any of it, connecting the dots, as we often do, making sense of the week that was. And we talked about the news of Michael Bloomberg maybe jumping into the presidential race here on today's deadline in the Alabama primary. We also talked about Proposition 205 and what it means in Tucson, or the result of it, rather, for going forward. What does that say about what is on the minds of Tucsonans? If you missed any of that or any show this week, I'd encourage you to go to kvoi.com/podcasts or go to iTunes or Google Play Music. Find the Creative City Show and go ahead and listen over the weekend anything you miss. We had a busy week on the show. Well, here to help us close out and talk about a serious topic, but one that relates to most all of us, is my friend Luis Hernandez from American Family Insurance, Hernandez Agency and Associates. Happy Friday to you, sir. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me. Good morning, everyone.
Yes. So I wanted to talk to you because you are going to make, let's just be honest, an unfun topic fun. Do you get that a little bit? As you handle some serious stuff, we're going to talk specifically life insurance and business insurance. And I just want to say, Luis and I are friends outside of this. I want to talk about this topic because it's important. He's not paying me. This is not a sales. This is nothing. This is not a commercial. This is talking about a topic that millennials don't talk about enough. Baby boomers don't talk about enough. And you get to, you know, I would think, Luis, 50, 60. A lot of people haven't thought about end-of-life issues, life insurance, how to pass things off well to the next generation. And a lot of our listeners, too, man, are business owners, and you do a lot of business insurance. And so we were talking. I thought it'd be interesting to talk about what you do on the air and serious topic. So I appreciate you being here. We'll get to business insurance, but tell me about life insurance. A lot of the customers that you work with, why is this important, and why do not enough people invest in themselves in this way?
Right. So life insurance can be confusing to a lot of people, and it's a, like you mentioned, it's something that they might not want to talk about. Neither make a commitment to make either a monthly payment or under life policy or even annual payment. A lot of people understand that once they commit to it, they understand that it's a long-term commitment. You don't necessarily have to look at it as an expense. It's more of a protection for if you have assets or things that you owe, it's just protection for you and your family. And when it comes to a business owner, there's a buy-sell agreement, and that's where it gets really interesting, because we've seen a lot of people fight over fighting over the business when someone dies, one of the business partners. But I just had a customer 2 days ago coming into the office, which we had asked him about life insurance in the past and always rejected us. He was diagnosed with a heart problem, and now he was interested in getting some life insurance. Unfortunately, I felt terrible, because he does not qualify for life insurance anymore due to his heart condition.
Mm. Oh, interesting.
We applied, and we went through everything, and he just, unfortunately, we had to deny it. And there might be some companies that might take the risk, but it's just not going to be what he was expecting to pay.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you a question that a listener asked me, and I thought it was good. They said, Zach, you got to ask Luis this question. He said, I know I have older friends who have the money to pay, you know, monthly for life insurance. They have a lot of assets. They have family. They're in their 50s, and they've never really thought about life insurance. And he goes, I don't know why more people don't think about doing that for their families, for their loved ones, for their end of life, which we're all going to get there. We're all going to have it. And I said, you know, I'm going to ask Luis that question, is why is this not on the front of more people's minds? I mean, we have auto, we have home, sometimes we have business. We don't really think about life insurance at the same level. Why is that? I'm curious. Genuine question.
Right. So we tend to do things that we're required to do, either by law or by the banks. And a lot of times people keep their auto policies in force because the bank is requiring them to do, and the state. Same thing with home. When someone's financing their home,
sure,
mortgage is requiring them to have that.
Yeah.
And when it comes to life insurance, it's funny, but we ignore that our family needs that. And people that you mentioned, this specific customer segmentation, the reason that I see that they don't get this is because they just don't trust anybody to help them with this matter. They obviously are people that need the life insurance. They might look at their assets as coverage, but that's not a smart way to do it, because all that life insurance is you're paying pennies to get collect dollars if you die. And it's really sad, because the problem that a lot of salespeople have is that they want to sell a life policy right on the spot, and it takes at least 7 visits to explain thoroughly everything to the insured. And with these specific customers, we got to sit down and take our time the ones advising them of what to get. And a lot of times there is not a good explanation to these customers, and they don't get the full understanding of how it can help them. There's a lot of tax reasons that they might want to do it if they pass away, and then their family are going to pay out taxes on all of those assets that you mentioned they might have. A lot of people start a life policy because there might be tax benefits they're getting by getting a life policy.
Hmm. Before we go to our first break, tell me about the business insurance that you do and how this connects to that. You said that there are a lot of situations where someone will pass on, and then the business affairs of what they do become a huge battle for the family that's remaining. Can you tell me about that piece?
Right. So we've been seeing this more often, where there's a lot of partnerships, and anybody going into business, we see two good friends getting together, starting a brewing company. Next thing you know, they're famous. They're getting their product everywhere. Their families are very important in this when it comes to business insurance, because I'll share an example with you guys. I have a vending machine company right now. the original owner started with just one by himself. Later on, he needed to grow the company, and he had to bring three business partners, where they brought some investment and some of the one brought technology experience. So they form a really solid team. They grew their company about four times. They're probably at $7 million in revenue right now.
Incredible.
So when we sat down, they actually went to a state planning attorney, and the life insurance company, all we do is fund the policy, but they basically each got their share of the company. They insured enough of what they own inside the company. And what this does is if the one of them were to pass away and they had a vested interest in the company, the family is not going to be left alone where they're not going to get anything. The life insurance pretty much acts as a buy sell, buys out the family, gives them their part of their share, whatever we insure them for. And it takes care of that problem that I'm sure you've heard about there, where someone passed away and they were left without anything because they didn't have things written down.
Right. Yeah, it's funny. My mom works in end-of-life healthcare and nursing. And these are, like you said, there's things that you have to do when you buy a home or you buy a car. This stuff is just, it just feels kind of like a gnat. You know, it's not something that you really want to deal with, but it's so important when things don't go as you planned. And so when we come back from the break, I want to hear from Luis. He meets with clients all day, five misconceptions about life insurance, five myths that Luis can bust for us here on this really important issue that, again, most of us would rather not have to deal with, but we're going to have to. And we might as well make it easier than it could be, right? That makes sense.
Correct.
To me. 790-2040 is our Why I Love Where I Live live line. If you have a question about business or life insurance, jump on the line here with Luis and I while we have him in studio. It's Friday, November 8th, our Friday show. We've got one more break, one more segment. Don't go away, Tucson. Much more to go. Tucson, welcome back to the show. We're ending this week with my friend Luis Hernandez in studio today, talking about life insurance and business insurance. And I wanted Luis to come in studio because we've got a mix of people who listen to this show. We have those that are 40 and up, and those who are 40 and down. We've got a little bit of everybody listening to the program weekly. And so I wanted to talk with you, have a fun conversation about an unfun topic, and that is life insurance and how business insurance fits into that. But let's wrap up this hour with five myths. Bust five myths for us, Luis, about life insurance. What's the first one?
Well, the first one, I'm sure everybody's thinking this, is that it's expensive. And unfortunately, most people, whenever I ask them about life insurance or if they have any, their immediate response, oh no, it's too expensive. And the reason why is because, like I said earlier, they're paying pennies to get dollars, but a lot of times people think that they have to pay dollars to get dollars, and that's not the case. So it's just sitting down with you, if you have an insurance agent or you're doing business with your personal lines with Geico, with Progressive, and you don't really have an advisor, it's really easy to find a local agent and just sit down and go over that and just find out how much it is for you. And especially for us millennials, it's not that expensive, especially we should get it right now because we're younger.
Okay.
And healthy.
Interesting. Do you have kind of a median point, a dollar amount a month that you feel comfortable sharing on the air of kind of what you've been able to serve your clients with, just to kind of give people a ballpark, or should they come and just see you because it's so specific?
No, there is a medium point. I think for our younger generation, they should expect to not pay more than $80 a month.
Okay.
That's high for that could be somewhere around $1 million in coverage. Now, a lot of them might not own a house yet, and there's not enough things to protect yet, but at least something that gets you just coverage, $150,000 can cost you like $20 or $30.
What if you're maybe someone who is, let's say, 50, 55, maybe has a little bit more net worth, owns a home? What have you found to be a median point there, right? We want to bust that myth that this is out of the roof expensive.
Right. So with these individuals, like I said, they have assets and they own a home, and it's definitely more, it's important to sit down and go over which type of policy. And that was actually myth number two. It's that the products, the choices can be overwhelming.
Yeah.
And that's to this specific audience you told me, you asked me about. The choices can be broad and to the point where one policy might seem very convenient for this individual, where the other one might give them a lot more coverage, but it's not as convenient as the other one. In this case, it's whole life versus term policies. And these individuals in their 50s, depending on what stage in their life are, as far as assets, if they have extra income and they're not necessarily in debt, they can get a whole life policy. But someone with, let's say, $500,000 in debt and still taking care of their family, maybe they have kids in college, they might want to consider term coverage because it's more affordable and it can give them more coverage just for while they get rid of that debt.
Gotcha. So there are options, but they're not as overwhelming as someone might think. You just need to sit down with a good advisor who can help you along the way. But in the last segment, and I just want to land here for a second, you encouraged folks who are interested to not get so bogged down that they wait around and don't do it. You mentioned somebody who unfortunately had a heart attack and they said, okay, wow, I need to go get life insurance, and no one would pick them up. So if you're in a spot where things are good, right, I guess the lesson is go ahead and pursue this conversation. And sit down with someone who can help think through the options.
Yeah, and back to myth number two, if I don't know if we really moved into myth number two. If things become too overwhelming, you can always start with term life insurance, which is going to give you more protection at a lesser price, at more not as expensive as a whole life. But in the long run, the whole life can be a lot less expensive because it's giving you a return on investment or cash value. But for these individuals that things can be overwhelming, they can always start with term and convert later on down the road. A lot of companies have a policy where they can convert into whole life after 6 months. Some of them, I think industry-wide, it's like 2 years. So if things become overwhelming for you, you can always just start with term. Let your agent know that you can convert later on. If what ask them what the options are of converting later down the road into a whole life product or universal life product.
Gotcha. How about the big old myth number three? This one's a fun one.
Well, this is for us millennials, and like I said, this customer, they came into the office. I think he was like 61 years old. First question I asked him is, how come you never got it before? Louise, because I was young and healthy and I didn't think I needed. And now he's at least 200 with mortgage and all other debt. He's at around $250,000 in debt. And that's pretty much what he would need in coverage, but it's hard for him because of his heart condition. But when it comes to our millennials, one of the problems is that we're too young and healthy and we don't really need it, and we don't have anything to really leave, or anyone to leave our whole our life policy to.
So we just don't think about it.
Yep, we don't think about it.
Well, the myth that you mentioned along that line was, we think about this topic and we start to think, we put an age on it, and we think that it's, well, that's for someone who's older. Right, that life insurance for someone, you know, someone who's older to think about. But you actually, you are a young professional. You gotten started in this in your early 20s. You've worked with a lot of millennials, which I was surprised to hear. You have a lot of kind of 20s and 30s who are coming into your office and saying, okay, let's make it happen.
Right. So back to myth number three. I started back in 2013 and I was only 23 years old. And a lot of people or other some of my peers told me, Louise, it's going to be hard for you to sell life insurance because, one, you're too young, and two, your generation just doesn't necessarily buy life insurance. And I immediately, a lot of times we think out of what we have in our pockets, like, and that's our budget. And I immediately got enough coverage for myself to cover up for my parents if I were to die. To be honest with you, Zach, I hate to see my parents working as hard as they do.
Yeah.
And before I was married or I had anything in life, and I was super healthy. I'm still super healthy, probably.
We hope so.
Yeah. But I was 23 years old, and I did an inventory of what my parents would take my parents to from if I were to die, for my parents to probably retire at age 50 and not have to worry about working ever again. So I was going to be able to do $1 million back when I was 23, but instead I did half a million dollars for myself. And that was enough to cover for my parents. Maybe they would have to work, but that was what I could afford. It only cost me like $36 a month.
Okay.
And it was really convenient for me to start it at that point. And because I started that policy, I started being able to educate a lot of people from my generation or my age.
Just from your experience, yeah.
Because of my experience. And I would just share my story with them. And a lot of friends and people that were referred to me around my age started getting these policies. The minimum that you can pay, it's like $10 or $12 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just available.
We're talking with Luis Hernandez, an agent for American Family Insurance over at Hernandez Agency and Associates. We got started talking about life insurance and business insurance. And again, I said at the beginning of this part of the hour, it's not a commercial. This isn't a paid gig for anything. This is a friend of mine. I work with him in the community. An important topic that people just don't talk about enough. And we've got older listeners. We have younger listeners. I thought this would be valuable. We have about 2 minutes left. So do you have myth 4 and 5?
Yeah. So myth 4 is that life insurance don't pay.
Okay.
That's a big myth. Just whenever you're into getting into a life policy, make sure it's a Fortune 500 company. It's really easy to look it up and their financial strength and just commit and just get started with something at least $12 a month or $15 a month. I'm sure you're going to spend that on something else throughout. There's people paying for their cell phone insurance $15 a month. So why can't you pay just $15 to get something in place?
3 less Starbucks a month.
There you go.
Okay. All right.
And myth number 5 is a lot of people think doesn't matter their age. If they're single and they don't have kids, they don't need it.
Okay.
But I've seen a lot. I've had 2 single people died in my career. And the family, the uncle, everybody was trying to get it. The funeral expenses were still there and a lot of expenses having to do with him passing away.
Wow. So to summarize the myths, it's not as expensive as you think. It's not as overwhelming if you're talking to the right person. It's not just for older people. It's for younger people. Number 5 is it's not just for couples. It's also for single people. And then number 4, I'm blanking on number 4.
So that people think that life insurance is a myth or it doesn't pay.
You got to find the right company. There we go. Got it. Luis Hernandez, if somebody listening wants to talk to you about this and you sound like you make it easy and it's you very clearly explain it, where's the best place to find you and give you a call?
All right. Thanks. So we're over close to the Tucson Mall on Oracle in between Prince and Roger at 3795 North Oracle Road. Suite 111, and our office number is 520-298-8070, and you can go into our website, luishernandezinsurance.com, and we'll be glad to sit down and talk to you if you're interested in just finding out how much it would cost for you.
Perfect. Louise, my friend, thank you for making an unfun topic a little bit lighter. It's important. I encourage people, again, this is a public service announcement here today. I encourage people to go check it out for your family, for your loved ones. Pass things on well to the next generation. That's what we're about here on the Creative City Show. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. That does it for us here on this Friday. Have a great weekend, Tucson. Bill Buckmaster coming up at noon, and so much more live and local radio here on 1030 The Voice. We'll see you on Monday.